Sandy, I'm walking to you. So Sandy Alvarado is one of our licensed vendors out of Omaha. She has many years of experience and a wealth of knowledge and wisdom. So Sandy has taught me a lot and will teach me, I know, a lot more in the future. So there you go, Sandy.
Thank you very much. I'll give a brief rundown and then I'll get to more specifics if you want to. I've been a licensed vendor for about 10 years now. At the peak of my time, I had 15 facilities with 55 machines. A year ago, I decreased my amount. In fact, I tried to leave the program, but they wouldn't let me. My husband had some health issues, so I was going to focus on him. So we have a very much smaller portion than what I had before, but I do a route, which means I don't just get to go to one place and stay nice and warm and only have to freeze from getting outside to getting into the building. This weather, I tell my clients or my customers, eat it now while it's fresh. I'll be back in April. A kind of a typical day, which is never typical because machines tend to have their own ideas. And I'll tell you what, you might not believe it, but when it is full moon time, those machines have attitudes. And I've kind of marked it. try to figure out, here's what my morning starts at, or probably the day before, the whole week. Figure out what facilities I want to service that day. I have 8 facilities right now. I have a storage unit that keeps all my product in because I did not want to keep it in my house. And these facilities don't have storage available for us. So figure out what I want to take for snacks, what, because everybody kind of has their own favorite, as Carol alluded to. I do have machines that are generic for soda, so I can carry all 3 of the big guys. Some that are brand specific, but still carries all 3 of the big guys. Wink, wink. And a load-up totes. I've devised a system. Instead of taking 20 boxes with 20 different snacks everywhere I go, I have fairly large totes with some like plexiglass dividers inside, and we stack them in there, and I can get 12 varieties of chips in one box, and then we call another tote our snack box, more or less, because that's where I put trail mixes and Pop-Tarts and little cookies and all kinds of stuff. I've got smaller totes than that to keep things organized. And I have another tote that's a candy tote that has all my wonderful varieties of candy, all 16 varieties. And trying to figure out what everybody likes does take time when you're a new facility, but you do figure out over time. Like Stony Brook Post Office really likes the peanut M&Ms, where Boys Town Post Office might really like Kit Kats, and you figure out what's that. You know, then we have another tote that's Danishes, and we load all that in our van. My husband's my driver. Then I have to figure out which sodas I want to take, and it's 20-ounce bottles. And they're 30 pounds a case, just to let you know. I've gotten very strong in my upper body. Thank you very much.
Who needs a gym?
Right. And when I can do it with one hand, then we'll be really good. So I load that in our car, and you have to be very, like, I don't know what I want to call it, maybe aware of your space. If you have, when I was training someone that was taking over my place before, she called me the snack Jenga queen, because I would just put things in there and load it up, and, you know, first out, last in, you know, thinking ahead. And then we have to, of course, take a cart with me to haul the things from our van to the facility. You know, and that's just like the daily thing, getting it ready to go. That takes about an hour. Then we're off to the races. Get to the place, unload what I can. Sometimes I have to make 2 trips, because if you have a lot of soda to take in, you can't quite pile that on top of your chips. And the totes also help. Nebraska tends to be a little breezy. And if you don't have them secured in a nice tote with a lid on it, guess what goes flying across the parking lot?
Yeah.
Your chips go everywhere. This is things I've learned over time. Getting the facility. My husband's not only my driver, you know, he's my partner. We do different, I do sodas, he does snacks. I'm very well capable of doing the snack machine. It's just more efficient when you have, you know, I can get mine done first, then I can assist him. You know, first thing I have my reader do, since it's not marked very well for blind people, and we haven't got anything that scans it very well. Some products are good to use with, what is that, Seeing AI, you know, app on the phone. Expiration dates, make sure we have nothing that's expired now, or if it's going to expire in the next week, we usually reduce the price. Let's see. We need to fill the machine at least halfway per selection. And if it's a facility that has a lot that goes through it, I might load it clear to the back of that particular selection so I don't have to worry or hope there's not as many holes where there's no offerings before I come back, because, you know, if there's nothing there, if they can't buy it, they can't make money. Then just load everything back on the cart, go back, go to the next place. The things I need to think about throughout my day at different locations, and I send myself emails all the time. Okay, they're low on this, and I need to make sure I get this, and send myself, you know, Boys Town needs Aquafina water next time. I definitely need to make sure I bring more Pop-Tarts next time. You know, sending myself notes. I have a pretty good memory, but unfortunately my body's getting older and there goes my brain too sometimes. While we're there, at least once a month, I try to do it more often, is basic cleaning and dusting of the machines, tops, outsides, insides. That helps the machine stay useful longer without any problems typically. You know, of course, you know, the delivery bay door, you want to make sure it's clean, because who's going to want to stick their, I mean, I'm sure all of us at some point in time, you've got something in the vending machine, you stick your hand in there and you kind of go, ew. Well, I don't want to go, ew, when I'm, you know, I don't want anyone doing that to my machine. I need to be better than the quote unquote other people. We need to show that we're more concerned in customer service and items like that. As far as customer service goes, on each machine we tape up a business card that has our contact information. Sometimes I'll post signs. I've recently done a cost increase, so I posted before I did it that things would go up about a nickel or a dime, and believe me, people do get upset about a nickel. So that if there is a problem, they can text me, they can call me, they can email me, because often they'll leave me a note, which I try to say, please don't leave the blind person a note. I can't read it unless you know how to write Braille. My husband has to constantly tell people to talk to me, because I'm the one that's in charge, not him. But often we'll get there and someone will go, oh, by the way, that machine over there has not been taking coins for the past week. Oh, thank you. Could have been here sooner if I'd known about that. I have to think about what I'm going to order when I'm getting low in my storage unit, too. I get my soda orders. I've kind of been grandfathered in with Pepsi. They're not allowing anybody in Omaha. Omaha is different than Lincoln. I do not care for Omaha Pepsi, but I get the product. And I can go pick it up, and anytime I can meet a delivery truck or go to the distributor and pick things up, it saves me time. I don't have one location. I don't have time to wait all day because they aren't always very good with their time frame. They might say 10 to noon, they'll deliver, and it might show up at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I can't afford to pay people to wait with me. You know, there's things I need to do. And I'm also a parent of a teenager, and you know, the rest of my life goes on as well. Let's see. I get a lot of my product from Sam's, in Omaha, we have all three beverage companies, Dr. Pepper, Coke, and Pepsi. And I get some deliveries from another distributor called Vistar, and they're out of Kansas City. And I don't meet a minimum there because I go meet the truck. And it just makes my life easier doing that. And you know, any minor repairs we need to do, oftentimes it's coin mechanisms where the change comes from. Might have a coin stuck for some reason, the machine decided to flip a quarter over into the nickel and it's sitting there not doing anything else. Had that just the other day. Bill acceptors, which is, you know, once you put the dollar in the machine, it takes it up into this little thing that holds it and has little belts and wheels and ocular things, and have to take those apart and clean them every once in a while because, you know, money's dirty. Sometimes it likes to eat the dollars. And that's always fun to try to get those little pieces of dollars out of there. Interesting story. I had a machine over at the federal building over on Capitol Street in Omaha. And up the road is a school, a high school. Apparently they were teaching, I don't know if it was maybe some special ed kids or they were just doing some kind of money kind of thing, so they had paper money. Well, kids tried to put the paper money in my machine. They tried to stick it down the coin slot. That didn't work so well. So we definitely need to have a little toolkit with us to do those little minor things. That's kind of it in brief. If you have something specific you'd like me to, as addressed earlier, okay. We did, until Chesterman's took over, we used to just be Coke, but Chesterman's took over a couple of years ago for Coca-Cola distribution in Nebraska. We, as a collective, did have an agreement with Coke to get decreased prices for us depending on volume. But once Chesterman took over, I don't think that went with us. But they're, as far as my experience, they're still cheaper than another company. But okay, you're going to go get this. Okay, if it depends on your individual person.
What's the question?
Becky's question.
I did. Could you repeat it?
About labeling?
Yeah, yeah. But could you repeat
Becky
it?
Becky asked earlier about labeling.
Right.
In my storeroom, I do not use Braille, but I have some vision. Now, Jim, I helped train him when he started, and he does have his items labeled in Braille so that he knows what's what. It depends on the individual person. Some machines, when I got them, they were brailled on their buttons and things like that for a blind person to use. You just have to make sure you keep up with the labeling if you change the product selection, like the sodas. The sodas are the easiest. As far as candy, there's, you know, low vision and non-visual, you can tell the difference in a candy bar most of the time. Things that are different are like your Snicker bars. An almond Snicker feels just like a regular Snicker. And you can tell front and back to make sure we're facing the product the right way. We've had some issues with that in the past. You know, there's some little secrets for that that I, you know, shared with Jim as well. That, you know, your seams are in the back. The only ones that kind of are a little more difficult, that you need a little visual help if you have no low vision. Yeah, like M&M's, there is no seam in the back. Skittles, there is no seam in the back. You know, things like that, your smaller ones. But oftentimes, you know, upside down, right side up. I've been known to do it on purpose, is turn something upside down just to see if somebody else say something to me. I like to see what people will do, and half the time they won't say anything. But when I put the wrong soda in the wrong column in the soda machine, yep, I get to know about that one. And then we also have our paperwork. I guess I should address that. We have reports we have to submit monthly, copies of our receipts, you know, just like any other business. You have incoming money and your outgoing expenses, and You know, we pay drivers, often, especially route driver, I need a driver. If you're going to one facility, you still occasionally do need a reader to help, especially with incoming deliveries, to make sure dates are read. Because if I'm getting a case of soda and it expires in 2 weeks, I will refuse that delivery. Some of the technology that I use, my iPhone is necessary in so many ways. As I alluded to earlier, I use Seeing AI. I send myself emails all the time. I'll send myself messages. They can communicate with me with messages. I have on there my banking information. There's a cashless system we've installed on some of the machines that are, it's called PayRange, so people can use their smartphones to pay for their product if the facility's set up for that well enough. Used to use a barcode scanner, but with the Seeing AI, it's very accurate, and I can have it read words, or it can scan the document UPC codes or the QR codes. Like I said, I send myself notes for my phone. It's just always on my side, and an earphone in my ear. So,
thank you.
You're welcome.
Good job. That was a good answer.
Carol, I have one question for you.
Okay.
And this might be a no-brainer, but it's about the fact that the commission is the state licensing authority. So I guess understanding the role of the state licensing authority, I'm assuming that somebody who wants to operate under the Randolph-Shepard program, the Randolph-Shepard program requires a state licensing authority.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And because they have to make sure they're the ones that are qualifying or verifying that a licensee is qualified to participate, so somebody couldn't be like an independent licensee and not go through the state licensing authority.
Correct.
Okay. And then I know from previous discussions, the state licensing authority in the commission, in our case, helps facilitate the things collectively, like the set aside funds, helping with some of the paperwork, some of those other types of things, collectively, like with retirement benefits, and so on. So are there other types of services and things that the state licensing authority helps to facilitate besides the couple that I just mentioned?
Carlos, I might defer. Do you
okay.
know?
I'm learning. I'm not quite sure.
If I understand your question, Mike, is very much the state licensing agency. What do we facilitate with the blind vendors, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, set aside is one. The use of set aside. Under the use of set aside, there are a number of things. What we can use the set aside for. We talk to the vendors about that. It has to be active participation. Active participation doesn't mean we have to do what they tell us, but it means we need to talk about and understand each other and listen to them. The other one is unassigned funds. Those are the monies mainly for the federal buildings where we don't have blind vendors, but we're subcontracting like national vending. Those are under a different area, and we also have to check with them what we do with those funds. And for now, they decided that will be for the retirement. Any policy affecting the MBE, we have to facilitate with them. Any policy. So whenever we want to make a change, like we work a year and a half or 2 years ago on the new agreement with the blind vendors, we need to visit with the vendors. Once we did that, we still need to send it to RSA for them to look at it too. So it's a threefold area, you know? The state license agency, the blind vendors, and RSA. And there are a few others, but this is very much what would impact the program under policies, written policy.
Mark, I could keep going forever.
I know. And I was just going to say, we...
I do have one critical question.
Can you pass that microphone to me just real quick?
You know, we are a little bit behind schedule between Carol, Mike, and whatever. Can we kind of wrap this up in maybe 12 minutes or so?
I could keep asking questions forever. This is interesting. I love understanding more about how this works. But the last question that I have, I think is really relevant for today, is we started to talk earlier about how the reduction in force is going to affect the NDE program. And part of my understanding is that the money that the vendors pay into the set-aside went to pay for the salaries of a couple individuals. So
no, it didn't.
That was not true.
No.
Okay. It used to, if I can get my...
Okay, so yeah, just to finish the question, but so I might be mistaken, so I thought that there was money that went into paying a couple people's salaries, so if that's not happening anymore, would set aside be able to be reduced, or would, you know, would that money be used a different way or whatever?
Can I get it?
Yeah, we can talk more about that later, what makes sense too. But in general, in order for us to get our federal grant, we need to be able to match, the state needs to be able to match with enough funds. Before we became a commission and for a few more years, the state didn't have enough money. We only have, at the most, $300,000. So we needed to come with like $500,000 with soft money. And some of that was the set aside that we use to match federal grants. And in that regard, yeah, the set aside helped to support staff members. But for the last several years, at least 8 years or maybe more, we don't need extra funds or to use any other soft money in order to match the federal grants. So the set aside used to be 13%, it keep going down, now it's 11%, because we don't need to use that for salaries. So the set aside now is being used for some maintenance, to buy some equipment, repairs, and also to match some of the retirement funds.
Okay.
Because if you look at it, the set aside money is the money that the vendors make, give us, so it's their taxes that they're paying, in top of already the sales taxes and
right.
Their own taxes. So the way I see it is, it's their money, so it should go to benefit their program directly.
And so because of time, Mark, if you're okay with it,
sure.
I'm gonna not have Nancy and Connie read the testimonies that were submitted in writing unless you want them to, but they will be in the
minutes. If it could
the
be
minutes.
In the minutes, that would be good. But please extend our appreciation that they
did do that. I've got a couple questions. Did you have anything else, Carol, on your presentation?
No.
Okay, I got just a question for you, Carol.
Okay.
As you know, these vending machines are in government buildings, and government people tend to understand the complaint process. And, you know, because the vending program is a priority, I think it's also a privilege. Can you tell me a little bit about, do you get a lot of complaints? How do you handle those complaints? And what do you do if there's repeat offenders type of things?
I do get complaints. I wouldn't necessarily say it's on a daily basis, but several times a week. And sometimes it's just things where, okay, the consumer, you know, did text the vendor or whatever, and then they turned right around and called me as well. So sometimes the vendor hasn't even had a chance to fix the problem. Sometimes they have, but there are times to where an issue does escalate to me, and then the vendor and I, you know, have a conversation that isn't always a pleasant conversation, because you know you need to address issues and things. And usually all of our vendors are really good about working immediately to correct a problem. But then for those repeat offenders, as you would say, there is a discipline process, so to speak, that is written out in chapter 3. And so I have had to start that with some vendors, but you know, our vendors are so great. It's usually that one first time to start that, and it's like, okay, you know, I haven't had problems since. So our vendors do work very hard. It is not easy being a vendor by any means. So.
A comment first. I've been trying to attend the vending meetings on a quarterly basis, and you know, what I come away is this is a business, and it's run like a business, and it needs to be accountable like any good business. And you know, the people that I talk to, I know a few vendors, they treat it like a business. So can you tell me, do you have a sufficient number of vendors? Do we have more than enough? Are you recruiting vendors? What does our future look like in vending?
In general, right now I would say we have enough vendors, because there is a difference between just being a licensee and being a vendor. A vendor is a licensee who's currently operating a facility. A licensee is someone who has a license and has the ability to. So we do have many more licensees in Nebraska. Some are just currently not operating sites. Some have retired, because your license stays with you until death, unfortunately, unless, you know, something else were to happen to where your license was revoked. But I don't even know if that's ever happened actually in Nebraska or not.
It's a lifetime thing.
Yep, there's no expiration date or anything. I always want our vendors to make more money and have more sites. And so I guess my thoughts would be to help improve the current vendors that we do have operating facilities, you know, make their income levels higher. But we're not opposed to saying, no, somebody can't come into the vending program.
Yeah.
Or whatever. So we want everybody to have that opportunity.
And then I guess the last one, that, and
maybe Carlos, you're going to talk about this in your report, but you know, there's some wording in our state law that talks about vending, and as blind vendors, we like the word priority. And I know you've been doing some research on legislatively changing that. Can you just tell us where we're at, or were you going to talk about that later?
No, I can talk about it now, so I don't have to talk about that.
Yeah, in general, like Carol mentioned, the Randall Shepherd program was passed in 1936, and it has the word a preference back then. And then in 1972 or 73, the law was changed to priority, but in Nebraska that wasn't changed. So we changed it after we became a commission for the blind. First of all, it was attached to the commission bill, but then we went to add the wording priority, but some of the senators were concerned that priority meant we can just sell whatever we want, and because nobody can take us out, we can sell it for $5 rather than $2. That wasn't an exaggeration, but that's what they were talking about. So what they say is, how about if we put some language that says you have priority as long as your prices are comparable to the other prices? And that's what we usually do. So we say that's fine. But then they put language there, comparable to other bids, not other buildings, but just other bids. And that's what gave us a hard time, because in their mind, the lawyers, the buildings, they say, well, we need to open it for bids. And whoever puts the first bid, we give it to them. So that's how we lost few buildings. This new one, to wrap it up, this new amendment is very much saying we will have priority, but also as it is at the Randall Shepherd program, as recently amended this year, January of 2019. So you have to reflect that language. That's what is going to happen.
Okay. Okay.
If the law passes.
If the law passes, and the, you know, I'll have to say, since I've been a commissioner, I appreciate all the work you've done, Carlos, to help open up opportunities that Randolph Shepherd has given to blind people that sometimes the government doesn't want to abide by. And I know you've done some great work in the federal buildings, and then also the efforts to get us in the state buildings. So, you know, these jobs are great jobs, and the more opportunities we have to show the public what blind people can do, I think it's a great thing. So I applaud your efforts there. Is there anything else on the MBE program before we move on to the next item?
Carlos, was the hearing for that the 13th of February?
No.
Is there, can you talk
about it?
It's going before the committee. It hasn't been heard. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and didn't you talk to the governor, and you know, you're trying to do it in the verbiage and not so much a special law, or is there a special law?
Thank you, guys.